when we go through some of these preparatory steps, it helps to produce content that is going to accomplish what we want to accomplish, which is making our vision reality. And so there are some good planning steps to take ahead of actually sitting down and creating an outline and writing and such. And if those steps are skipped, we might write the wrong book. But if we follow those steps the right way, then we can be sure that we're writing the right book, which really helps when it comes to actually write the book, because when we're certain we're writing the right book, it's a lot easier to put pen to paper and actually write. When we have doubts about the book we're writing and if it's the right book, it's really easy to get writer's block then.
Welcome to The Author's Leverage, the podcast where we explore the journeys that await you beyond your book. I'm your host, Parshel Tashi, and in each episode, we connect with best-selling authors, publishing experts, and industry pros to unveil the pathways that enable you to leverage and amplify your book for extraordinary impact and income. Whether you're a seasoned author or just embarking on your authorpreneur adventure, prepare to be inspired. Today, we're joined by a guest who's going to share some invaluable insights with us. But before I introduce them, I want to invite you to download your copy of our ebook and its companion digital workbook. It's called 5 Ways to Get More Bang for Your Book. It's a comprehensive guide to supercharge your author journey, and you can find it below this episode, along with where you can connect with us on social media, subscribe, and rate the podcast. Now, let's dive into today's episode and take a sneak peek into the future of your success as an author. Everybody, welcome in. I'm excited today talking to Josh Steinle. Hopefully, did I say that right, Josh?
You did. Yeah.
It's good. Excited to talk to him. He actually has an incredible workbook specifically designed for the author who's serious about getting their book published with all the best practice. Honestly, never come across anything as robust as what Josh has put together. So I'm excited to talk to him. Let me introduce him. Through his company, Published Author, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today, bestselling author Josh Steinle helps entrepreneurs write and publish nonfiction books they can leverage to grow their businesses. He's a TEDx speaker, and his writing has been featured in more than 300 articles in 24 publications, including Inc., Forbes, Fast Company, TechCrunch, CNN, and Time. And as a best-selling author and founder of Published Author, he's doing an amazing job in his space. So, Josh, thanks for being here. I'm excited for the conversation.
Thanks, Parshel, for having me on.
Yeah. And I know there's so many strategies that you have covered and put into your workbook. So we'd love for you to share some of those key strategies for authors, and feel free to also share a little bit how you got into this space, because I know your story is pretty cool.
Let's start with the story first.
Yeah.
I never thought of myself as an author until just a few years ago. I'm 48, so my first book came out after I was 40. When I was a little kid, I used to write stories and stuff. I think a lot of kids do. I read a lot of books. I was a voracious reader, but it just never occurred to me that I would be a book author someday. And what really started me down that path was that back in 2013, I got the opportunity to write for Forbes magazine. Mm-hmm. And that I had written some articles for local business publications and I'd blogged a lot, but I never thought of myself as a writer, as a professional writer, like a real writer. And so when I started writing for Forbes, that was the first time that I took it seriously. And I loved it. I had so much fun writing articles that I went out and I tried to get articles in every other publication I could get into. So I went from Forbes to Entrepreneur and then to Mashable and TechCrunch. And I started getting contributor positions at all these different publications and submitting freelance articles. And I just had a blast doing that and I loved it. And after I'd written a couple hundred articles, I started to think, gee, maybe I could put a book together.
Mm-hmm.
And marketing agency, MWI, we had an idea that I should write a book about CMOs, chief marketing officers, because we felt like these are the people we're pitching with my business. And so maybe if we had a book that showed that we really understand them, maybe that would improve our close rate with deals.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote this book, Chief Marketing Officers at Work, and that was my first book. And I didn't really write it. I went out and I interviewed 30 CMOs and then I put the interviews in this book. And so I was more like the interviewer and the editor, but I didn't really feel like a writer, but I had put this book together and my name was on it as the author. So that was my first book. And from there, after doing that, I thought, gee, that wasn't that bad. And I had gone through the publishing process with a traditional publisher, and I felt like I knew a bit about how the industry worked after that experience. And so then I started thinking, gee, that wasn't that bad. That was actually pretty easy. I think it'd be pretty easy to write a book. So that's when I started really getting into it and started writing. And around the same time, I was already doing coaching on influence and personal branding and thought leadership, but my focus was general. It was a little bit vague. And as I was coaching, I had a mastermind group that I was working with. And one of the members who had actually pushed me to start the mastermind group, he stopped showing up. And when I went to him, I was like, hey, why aren't you showing up for the meetings? You're the one who pushed me to do this. And he said, yeah, I don't feel like there's any direction or purpose. Like, I'm learning great stuff, but what's the point of it? Where are we going with this? And I started thinking about that. And I thought, yeah, I need some sort of success path. I'd been listening to Stu with Tribe, and he talks about groups and monetizing groups and communities. And he talks about this idea of having a success path. And I thought, yeah, I don't really have a success path. What are we working towards? And as I started to think about all the things I could push my people towards, whether it was speaking or launching a course, what I settled on was helping people write a book, because I felt like a book was the core thing that you could build everything else around. Once you have a book, it's easier to get speaking gigs. It's easy to create a course based on that book. And so I chose to focus on helping entrepreneurs to become authors. And that's where this company Published Author came from. That's where the workbook came from, and everything that I'm pushing related to books now.
That's huge. And it's all connected. And like, your story is huge. Like I said, you were already writing and doing really great work there. And then specifically with the CMO book, that's when it was like, all right, I'm specifically writing this book to grow a business. And that, I know, is the seat that many authors are in who are maybe consulting or coaching or maybe in transition. A big part of why they're doing it is to have an impact on their business growth. So what are some of the key strategies that can ensure, you know, when authors go about this path, that it is going to for sure have a positive impact on their business growth?
I find that a lot of authors tend to jump in and just say, hey, I want to write a book. I'm going to write a book. And they start, they have some sort of vague idea, or maybe they have a specific idea, but they really jump into writing too fast. Mm-hmm. And I'm all about action. I'm all about just getting something done and not sitting around for years. But a little bit of preparation and planning can go a long way, or a little bit of analysis and strategy. And so I have a framework I developed while I was doing thought leadership coaching called the 7 Systems of Influence. And so I walk my clients that I'm coaching through these 7 systems. And it starts out with vision, and then genius zone, and audience, and then content. And content, which is system number 4, that's the book. That's where we get to the book. But there are these 3 steps before of vision, which is knowing what you want to do with this book or what you want to accomplish. When I started my first book, we had a clear vision. It was, we want to attract chief marketing officers to our company, and we want to help close deals with chief marketing officers. That was the big why behind why I was writing that book. Mm-hmm. And then Genius Zone was, that's the combination of skills, traits, experience, knowledge, et cetera, that you have that make you an ideal person to write your book. And for me, it was, hey, I've run a marketing agency for 20 years. I've written all these articles on marketing for all these different publications. And I had run groups and conferences and events. I knew how to interview people. So I felt like, yeah, I'm in a good position to go out and interview these CMOs. And I could use my credentials with Forbes to get in and interview people that I wouldn't have gotten through to otherwise. And that's how I was able to get CMOs from like Spotify and Target and Home Depot and these big companies to sit down with me. And so I had a lot of things going for me that I felt like, hey, this can help me get through to these CMOs and write this book. And so that was my genius zone. And then the third part was the audience was, who am I writing this for? Mm-hmm. And that was pretty easy too. We were writing it for CMOs to read and other marketing people. So I went through those 3 steps to lead me to okay, then I know what the right book is to write for my company and for my audience. And there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there who say, I've got this idea and I'm going to write this book. And they write the book and then they realize, why am I writing this book? What's my vision? What do I actually expect to happen with my business? How is this book connected to my business and helping my business grow? And who exactly is my ideal audience? Do I really have a good handle on who they are, what makes them tick, why they would want to read this book, and also why that entrepreneur in particular is the right person to write that book? When we go through some of these preparatory steps, it helps to produce content that is going to accomplish what we want to accomplish, which is making our vision reality. And so there are some good planning steps to take ahead of actually sitting down and creating an outline and writing and such. And if those steps are skipped, we might write the wrong book. But if we follow those steps the right way, then we can be sure that we're writing the right book, which really helps when it comes to actually write the book, because when we're certain we're writing the right book, it's a lot easier to put pen to paper and actually write. When we have doubts about the book we're writing and if it's the right book, it's really easy to get writer's block then.
And you're right. It's very easy to do that. And those tips, I think, are really helpful to consider. And I just want to highlight as well, for those who are listening in, the steps that Josh is mentioning is all listed in his workbook. He's given the entire playbook for you of how to go about this process and really consider all of these other areas that go into having a book online for purchase, for sale, that's connected to your business and focus on the growth of it. So that's huge. And I want to also segue into the speaking side of things. So I know that you've been on the TEDx stage, and oftentimes for those who have books, being on stage is like a huge way to further leverage it. In your standpoint and what you've seen, how can authors utilize public speaking to enhance the success of the book?
I gave my TEDx talk before I ever wrote a book, and having the TEDx talk, definitely there was some credibility and authority that was there. And so I think that made it easier for me to get my first book deal. Mm-hmm. And I think it helped with marketing just overall for the book. But what I really saw was the other way around, that once I wrote the book, it really helped my speaking career take off, because I started out like everybody else. You speak for free at first. And then once you have enough experience, you start trying to charge just for hotel and lodging. You're just trying to make sure you're not losing money on that speaking gig. And then you start getting brave and you start asking for a little bit here, a little bit there, and you start bumping it up slowly. Once I wrote my book, all of a sudden, what I could ask for and get jumped up a lot. And I actually got a call from a guy who was with the Speakers Bureau, and I asked him, because I just published my book, and I said, hey, I just published my book. Should I be able to charge more now, and how much more? And he said, oh yeah, as soon as you have a book that checks a box for event organizers and you can ask for a lot more, you might start out charging $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 to do a speaking gig plus hotel and lodging or travel and lodging. But he said, as soon as you write a book, if you have a good book that targets a certain audience that's in demand, then you can start asking for 10 or 15 grand. My eyes popped. I was like, whoa, like that would be amazing. And so I started asking for that, and people didn't bat an eye. It was just, but I couldn't have done that without the book. The book solidified my authority in a way that people looked at me differently. And definitely in the speaking world, that was the case.
100%. And it makes me think too, when I think about speaking engagements also in the, when I think about platforms and stages and podcasts, also stages as well, where it is different. It's not like being paid to get on stage to speak, but it comes with its own benefits to just being on different platforms and different stages that it makes sense to do. And I know that this usually ties into areas around visibility, social media, even for how authors can be doing more online. Right. So I'm curious, what advice do you have for authors who are trying to increase their book's visibility and, you know, use social media, let's say, to do that?
There are so many things out there that you can do. And I've done everything multiple times, every which way, trying to figure this stuff out, because I'm a marketing guy at heart and I love experimenting and trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work. So I've tried everything there is to try on social media. I've tried DMing people. I've tried promoted stuff on every platform. I've done organic. I've done tons of content. I've focused on more high quality content. So I've tried all these things. And what I've come back to is there's no substitute for writing a good book and getting word of mouth. That's the thing that really fuels book sales and people getting your book, because you can do everything possible on social media. You see these guys like Hormozy or Alex Hormozy. He's blown up on social media over the last year. He's got a book out there. He sells 16,000 copies every month of his book. And it's easy to look at what he's doing on social media. He's spending 10 or 20 grand a month on social media.
Yes, 20, yeah.
And he's everywhere. And it's easy to look at that and say, that's why he's blowing up, because he's doing all this. No, that's not why he's blowing up. That helps. But the reason he's blowing up is because he has a book that's really good and has a lot of really useful tactical information. And that gets people talking about it. And so you can do everything right on social media, but if your book is not that great, it's all going to fall flat. It's going to disappear. Alex or anybody else could spend 20 grand a month on social media for years, but if they don't have a good book, nothing is going to happen. It doesn't matter how good the social media strategy is. If you have a good book, all that stuff can help and support and build more credibility and authority and traffic and all that. But really at the core, you've got to focus on having a really good book. I was listening to a podcast with Daryl Eves the other day. He wrote the YouTube formula, and he's the guy behind Mr. Beast and a bunch of other huge YouTube successes. And somebody said, what's the main mistake that new YouTubers make? And he said, thinking their content is good when it's really bad. And it's the same with authors. The biggest mistake is that they think their book is awesome and really it's not that great, and they need to go back and make it better. So if there's anything to focus on, it's not really social media. It's make a really good book, and then whatever you do on social media is going to go really well.
Absolutely. And for you, how do you define a really good book?
How do you define a really good book? It's really in the results. Because if I had picked up a copy of Alex Hormozy's book,
right,
without him already being a known commodity and being semi-famous and everything, if I just picked up the book, I would have looked at it and said, this is cheap paperback. The cover design's terrible. I don't like the title. It seems like a get rich quick type of thing. I would have thought all of that before I ever opened the book.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would have read the book and I would have said, gee, this seems like a lot of advice for gym owners. And that's not me. And so there's some useful stuff in here. I think I would have come around if I had actually read the whole book, but I'm not sure I would have gotten through the whole book, except that by the time I picked it up, I already knew who he was and knew that he had great stuff. So, sorry, what was the original question?
How do you define a good book?
Oh, yeah. How do you define a good book? All right. So it's the results that Alex has gotten because of his book, because the content is great and because it is helpful. That's the only way that you can really define what a great book is. If I were looking at that in a vacuum before anybody knew about it, before it blew up, I don't know if I would have known that it was a great book. I might have figured it out. I'm positive that I would have figured it out. It is entertaining. It is quick. There is a lot of valuable stuff in it, but I'm not sure I would have categorized it as a great book. And yet now we see that so many people are buying it and using it and leveraging it. And so it's become a great book. Now, there are books out there that I think are great books that aren't nearly that popular.
Right.
The average self-published book sells 250 copies during its lifetime. Most books are not selling 16,000 copies a month like Hormozy's book. One of the best books I've ever read on entrepreneurship was actually a book that inspired me to write my first book, and it's called Entrepreneurs at Work. And it was written by Jessica Livingston, who's one of the co-founders of Y Combinator. And she went out and interviewed a bunch of founders in Silicon Valley. And it's an amazing book. How many copies has it sold? Maybe a couple thousand. It probably has not sold in its lifetime, in the last 15 years, the number of copies that Hormozy sells in a single month. But I still think it's a great book because I liked it and it was really helpful to me. And I think any entrepreneur or founder who reads it would get a lot of value out of it. But for a lot of other audiences, it wouldn't be that valuable because it's not tapping into something that they want. Is broad-based appeal something that makes a book great? No, it sells a lot of books. Doesn't necessarily mean the book's great. But yeah, there's a lot of subjectivity there, right? Because we all have different opinions. To me, it might be easier to talk about what makes a book not so great. Bad writing, bad editing, having no audience that connects with the book. Nobody really wants to read it. And it's easy to get tricked into thinking you've got something great because it's interesting to you, but we're so biased and subjective. It's really, it behooves all of us as authors to go out and get other people to read our book before we put it out there. Not that we should trust everything completely that other people say about our book, whether it's good or bad. If you show a book to your mom, she's going to say it's awesome and it's incredible. What she means is, I can't believe that this person I gave birth to wrote this thing and put a bunch of words on paper. That's cool. But she would say the same thing about the book that you wrote in when you were 5 years old about a jet or something. So it's like, your mom's going to love your book no matter what. And if you give it to haters, they're going to hate on your book no matter how great it is. And if you give it to an editor or a book person, they're like haters. That's their job, is to look at all the holes in your book and tell you what's wrong with it. So it's hard, but if you give it to enough people and you get constantly good feedback from people and they start spreading it around, you're onto something. And as an example, my workbook, which you've seen, it's just a Google Doc right now. It's not published per se the traditional way. There's no book form that you can go buy of it yet. But I've had hundreds of people who have been using that while I've been writing it. And so I've been getting feedback at the same time that I was writing the workbook. And so I know that there's good material in there because I've gotten feedback from 300 people who have used the workbook, many of whom have actually used it to publish books that are out there now. And so getting that kind of live feedback as I'm writing the book has helped me to know that, hey, I've got something good here. Is it great? I don't know if it's great. But I think it's pretty good. And I know that tactically or technically, there's the information in there that a lot of authors need. I don't know if this is super helpful for other writers out there listening to this, trying to figure out how to write a great book. But I guess one other tip that I would say is, the more you read, the more you can claim to know what a great book is. If you've read Ryan Holiday, for example, he reads something like 250 books every year. That's his whole. And so if Ryan Holiday says that a book is good, people trust him because he reads more books than anybody else in the world practically. And so he's got his email list and he shares the books that he thinks are the best books. And tens of thousands of people buy those books every month because they say, gee, this guy's reading 250 books and every year, and here are five books that he says are his favorite books. I'm going to take that pretty seriously. If you read a lot of books, you get a sense for what's good, for what's bad, and you can write a better book. You can get a better sense. Is that a guarantee? No, but dang, it helps a lot.
It helps. Yeah, a ton. And I know that, speaking of Alex Hormozi's book, I know that he also took the self-published route, which comes up as a big dilemma for a number of authors too. So it's just always, Alex is definitely, I think in some respects, like just really showing what is possible in some ways around, again, having a really solid book. But then it felt good to know that this was, it's self-published, I believe. Am I right about that? It's self-published?
100%.
Yeah. So I would love your perspective on that. Like, how can authors best consider those options that might be with them, whether self-published, hybrid, or going the traditional route?
Sure. And for those who haven't heard of hybrid publishing, it's an in-between. So you've got self-publishing, where you do all the work and you pay for everything, but you own your book. And you've got traditional, where the publisher takes care of everything, pays for everything, and all you have to do is show up and write your book and give them a manuscript, and then your work is basically done. But then they own the book and they do whatever they want with it. And then you've got hybrid in the middle, where the hybrid publisher does all the work, but you pay them to do the work. So they're selling services, essentially. And so today, it's getting more and more to the point where I just tell every single one of my clients, it only makes sense to go with self-publishing or hybrid publishing. Traditional publishing just doesn't make sense for anybody unless you're Prince Harry or Obama or something.
Yeah.
Because a huge part of it is the time factor. It takes so long for your book to work through the traditional process. The traditional publishers right now, the Penguins, the HarperCollins and such, they're already planning their books for 2025 right now, which means they already know which books they're going to print in 2025. If you're writing a book right now, your book's going to come out in 2026 or 2027 or something. They just have such a huge backlog of books from huge famous people that unless you're huge and famous like Prince Harry, you have to get in line at the back of the line, and it's going to take forever for your book to come out. So everybody I talk to who's a client of mine, as soon as they hear that, they say, okay, forget that. I'm not doing traditional publishing. And that's before you even talk about the inconvenience of working with traditional publishers and how they'll design book covers you don't like. They'll put a title on it that you don't like. They'll edit your book in ways you don't want them to. And by the time you're done, you're sitting there looking at what they've done and you're like, wait, why am I even working with this publisher? Oh, and then when they finish your book, they say, here's your book. You're responsible for all the marketing. Good luck. You're like, wait, what? I'm doing all the work here. You guys get the money. You get to own the book. Like, why did I even work with you?
Yeah.
And when you look at hybrid publishing, that's a great option. It can be expensive. You'll pay anywhere from $30,000 to $60,000 to $90,000 to go through a good hybrid publisher. So it does get expensive to go that route. And that's why so many people are pushed into self-publishing, because the tools are so good and they make it so easy to publish your own book that it just makes so much sense and it's so fast. I have a friend who she wrote, edited, and published her book in 2 weeks. She wrote it 1 week, she got it edited the next week, and at the end of 2 weeks, she slapped a cover on it and sold it. It wasn't the best book in the world. It was only paperback. There's no Audible paperback in Kindle. But that book was good enough that she landed multiple six-figure deals off of it during the next 12 months. So it got the job done, even though it wasn't the best book in the world. And so the things you can do with self-publishing are incredible these days, and traditional publishing is not that incredible these days.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I love the hybrid model, because it still keeps the author in a position of ownership and still having to support at the same time. Yeah, it's interesting how that has shifted. And Alex Hormozi, if there ever was an example for what's possible with a self-published book, who is, I think now he just started taking more speaking engagements and things like that, and what he's able just to charge for that.
Yeah.
It's probably...
Hormozi's definitely like in the 80, 90,000 per speaking engagement category now. He's following in the footsteps of Gary Vee, and he's got it made. And yeah, it's all on self-published books. And when you self-publish, you don't get into the New York Times bestseller list because they don't add self-published books to that.
Mm-hmm.
But who cares? He's selling 16,000 copies a month. He can charge whatever he wants for speaking. And he's attracting people to acquisition.com so that he can invest in business. His vision is happening. Everything that he wants is happening. He doesn't care about the ego trip of getting in the New York Times bestseller.
Right. And I listened to a video of his where he talked about the book in particular and just how, for lack of better words, he called it a money pit. You know, he's saying he hasn't really made anything specific off just the book, but that's just the book. Clearly, there's other tentacles that he has from that are bringing you revenue, because it's not a waste of time. He's not, but he's talking about just what it takes to maintain and to keep reaching new audiences and keeping that, putting the word out there. He's doing really, I think, just such an amazing job. And it's just really interesting to watch. And now he just dropped an announcement for his second book, which anybody who read the first book was already waiting for the second book before he was done with the first. It just was just incredible. A lot to learn, a lot to really take in there. So, Josh, this has been a really good conversation. I've enjoyed it. My little Grits here, who I thought was going to be making more noise, my little cat, has found himself asleep in my lap. So That's a good sign. Maybe we calmed him down or something because he was a little rowdy before. But yeah, thank you for being here. I would love for you to share where folks can reach and connect with you. We'll be sure to link that below the episode. And then any other last parting words of advice that you want to share as we wrap up would be awesome.
You can connect with me and get my workbook completely free at publishedauthor.com. If you go to publishedauthor.com, there's a free masterclass and just click on that and it will take you to a place where you can sign up and get free coaching, get the workbook for free. And then people can connect with me directly a little more personally through joshsteinle.com.
Beautiful. And any words of advice to all the aspiring authors or authors to be? And existing authors, seasoned authors, what would you wrap up the conversation with?
4 million books are published every year. That's a lot of competition. That's a lot of other books. And you might feel like there are too many other people out there. Nobody's going to care about my book. How are people going to find my book with all the noise out there? But the thing is, nobody else can say what you have to say the way that you're going to say it. You've got Dave Ramsey. He's this financial get out of debt guy. You could say he said everything there is to say about financial advice. But then Ramit Sethi comes along and he says, I'm going to do the same thing, but I'm going to target a different audience, a younger audience. And he built a huge niche for himself in the personal finance space. No matter what it is, even if 10,000 people have already written the book that you want to write, none of them is going to say it the way that you're going to say it. And there are people out there who won't listen to anybody else but you. There's something about your story, your tone of voice, the way you say things, that's going to appeal to a certain audience. And so no matter who you are, no matter whether you feel like it's too late or there's too many other people out there, you should still write that book because there's somebody out there who needs it.
100%. Said, Josh, I just want to acknowledge your work and again, highlight this workbook. I highly recommend that if you're listening, to go and check that out in the links below. And Josh, this has been amazing. I so appreciate your time and you sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thank you, Parshel.
All right, that concludes another episode of The Author's Leverage. And I trust you're leaving today's conversation inspired and equipped to see your book as a source for so many possibilities. Before we part ways, I want to remind you to download your copy of the ebook and its digital companion workbook, 5 Ways to Get More Bang for Your Book. Again, it's a roadmap that's going to be useful to help you unlock the full potential of your book. Find it on our website, connect with us on social media, subscribe to the podcast, and share it along with a fellow author. Until next time, remember that your words have the power to change lives. So keep innovating, keep leveraging, and keep making an extraordinary impact. We'll see you next time.